Well, hey, everybody, it's Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on this week's episode of I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Thanks, as always, for joining me for interesting healthcare-related discussions. And today's guest is an old friend of mine. We go way back to Dallas days, many, many, many years ago. Say hello to Michael Wiggins. Michael, how are you, buddy?
Dr. Stevenson, it is great to see you. Yeah, after all these years and staying connected, just to be back and have a conversation with you, I'm excited about that.
Me too. Me too. We met back years ago when you were running Children's up in Plano. I don't know what I was doing at the time, but we've stayed connected throughout the years. Caught up a couple of times at some ACHE congresses, and then had the opportunity to work in the same organization for a little while, and so got reconnected in that way too. But we both have gone through some transitions over the last year, haven't we, Michael?
That's right. That's right. Things change. And it is, healthcare is a small world. And so, it's like my mother would say, just be nice to everybody because your chances are you're going to see them again, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. Never burn a bridge because you never know when you're going to run into those same people. So let's talk about your transition. Why did you make the move to becoming a professor and working in academia?
Yeah, well, a lot of years working basically in provider organizations, I'd spent 30 plus years in all different types of settings, hospitals, community hospitals, for-profit, nonprofit, physician practices. But most of my career was in academic medical centers and, including the last 10 years or so when I was chief executive of some children's hospitals, as you were mentioning. Mm-hmm. But throughout all that, I just had this love for academics. I mean, as part of working in an academic medical center, you love that environment. You love the energy around learners and teaching. And even when I was working in those roles, I would often do guest lectures, which I know you've done, many of our colleagues do, but then also eventually just began taking on adjunct roles where I would actually teach a course in a master's program or what have you, and just mm-hmm. loved that so much that I went back again. I think we're similar in this way, went back, got my terminal degree, got my doctorate, because I knew one day this is where I wanted to go. And just had this amazing opportunity with Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center to join the faculty there it's been a little over a year and a half ago now in 2024. And it has just been fabulous. I work with a great group of colleagues there and, just opportunity to work on training this next generation of leaders.
Well, that's great. Hey, Michael, tell my audience a little bit about Texas Tech's Health Sciences Center. Hey, it's out in Lubbock. We're not going to talk about anything but football or sports related between my Baylor Bears and Texas Tech, who has kind of owned us over the last year. But tell us about the Health Science Center.
Well, I was hoping this wouldn't become personal, right? Now that we're in the same conference, right?
And that's right.
That's all right. It'll cycle back at some point. But just love the work there. The Health Sciences Center is just an incredible organization. I have the privilege of teaching in the School of Health Professions and the Department of Healthcare Management and Leadership. We have both an undergraduate program where I teach as well as a master's program. A tremendous group of leaders there. The program directors for the undergrad program, Drs. Merritt Brockman and Carrie Shaver, are just outstanding leaders. The program director for the master's program is Dr. Morgan House. They are just tremendous leaders, very much focused on helping people advance in their careers and focusing on expanding healthcare access to underserved areas. You mentioned being out in Lubbock, a lot of rural populations in that area. And so really trying to think about how are we training the next generations to think about that. And we have just a wonderful group of colleagues I get to work with. It's an interesting mix of some who are what I would call academics, people that is their career, teaching and research. And then some people like me who sort of came to the party late and spent a number of years as practitioners and are now teaching. I think that mix just adds a great kind of mix of experiences for our students. And most of our students have a little bit of experience in healthcare. Many of them are clinical, whether they be respiratory therapists, physical therapists, nurses, who are now going back and wanting to really learn more about the leadership aspect of healthcare. So it's a tremendous program. You know, I do my little commercial, would highly recommend anybody interested to take a look at it, but just thrilled to be part of a great group of colleagues there.
You know, that's something that healthcare, honestly, I think you'll agree with me, Michael, is the fact that we haven't done a great job with succession planning. And so, you know, being able to really share your career and your practical experience with these students has got to be invaluable to them. And you know, giving them a real world perspective of what's going on. You know, you mentioned I went back and got my doctorate, and I went to a really small university in Virginia, did it online. And most of my all of my professors were academics. They really had no practical healthcare experience, which was really interesting. Here they are teaching healthcare. But, you know, to have somebody that is, you know, been boots on the ground, run a, you know, large successful organizations has got to be invaluable to these students. So number one, thanks for doing that, because our industry needs that. But number two, talk a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing in these students. And you know, if you can identify one or two traits that your students have that you see that make you think that, hey, you know, this student really has it and they've got a real opportunity to make a difference in healthcare long term.
Well, I'll tell you something that is so exciting and energizing to me. One of the first things that I do in the courses I teach is I ask them why. Why are they pursuing a healthcare management degree? What's their motivation? And almost without exception, the answer is some version of, I want to serve my community. I want to improve the health status of my community, or I have a family experience and I want to be able to make a difference in what they're experiencing. And it is so exciting to me to know that's where they're starting from, because as you and I both know, as you get out into the real world and the pressures of making the economics work and all those things, we want to hold on to that core of why we do this. And to hear these students say that's where they're starting from, it really energizes me. And I try throughout the courses to keep impressing upon them, don't lose that. Always hold on to that. Always go back to that. Because when you're making tough decisions, if you're making them primarily around what's going to best serve the community that I serve, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, I totally agree. Yeah, I came to healthcare after 4 years in another industry. And it was funny. I never thought about going to med school, never thought about really going into healthcare during college, because I don't like pain, I don't like blood, and I don't like needles. So what would I be? Why would I go into a hospital? So, but I had a dear friend who happened to run the largest healthcare system in Arkansas at the time. And he said, I know you're not happy in your current job. Send me a resume. I have no idea what we have. And so I came in. My first job in healthcare was in a freestanding physical medicine and rehabilitation hospital, where I did business development strategy, which I'd been doing in my previous job. But being able to integrate that into healthcare, and they did a great job for me by saying, we know you know nothing about healthcare. So spend the first 6 weeks round with everybody in the hospital, find out what they do and how they invest in patients. Michael, you know, the first day I did that, I knew I was called to healthcare. And my philosophy was always, hey, I'm not a clinician. I want to try to make things as easy as possible for calling for me. And so that was whenever I do any kind of adjunct teaching or lecturing, I really impress upon those students, healthcare is a calling. And, you know, I had an administrator tell me many years ago, you can make a lot of more money in another industry, but you won't be as self-fulfilled as you are in healthcare. And after 38 years, I found that to be incredibly true. So again, impressing that upon students, I think is key. And I'm so glad to hear that you're doing that. So what do you teach?
Well, I teach a variety of courses. Healthcare economics is one of the key courses that I teach. I teach that every semester. A great opportunity. I mean, as you and I know, and your listeners know, economics in the healthcare industry are very complicated. Matter of fact, one of the exercises we do is I ask them to walk through step by step the process of buying a cup of coffee and the process of going to see their doctor. And how do they pay for it? And yeah. And I mean, the complexity just magnifies itself as you begin looking at how different it is. So, fundamental course in healthcare economics. I teach the marketing and strategy course as well. And then I teach a community health course as well as their quality and patient safety course. So I have a relatively large portfolio of classes I teach. But I, again, love it, love the energy that the students bring and love the opportunity to work with colleagues around research in those areas, too.
That's great. What kind of research are you doing right now?
Yeah, where I spend my time is primarily around community and public health research, policy in particular. I'm particularly interested, again, I think this goes back to both of our careers as practitioners, that you see the impact that community health, public health can have on the healthcare industry kind of across the board. And so I'm very interested in policy decisions that can potentially create downstream benefits, economic benefits to the community. A particular area that I'm interested in is around prenatal care. We all know that negative birth outcomes are not only expensive from a human standpoint, but they're expensive economically as well. And so if there are things that we can do, policy changes we can make in terms of improving access to prenatal care, improving the quality of prenatal care, birth outcomes as a result would be better. Expense to the healthcare industry would be lower. And so a lot of work around those areas. And I'll say another thing about that. And again, I know you experienced this in your career. So much of what we do around improving health status, it takes a long time for those benefits to show up, right? If a 50-year-old person starts a better diet, stops smoking, and starts exercising, it's going to be 20 years before they don't have the heart attack, right? But for a pregnant woman, you're going to know the outcome of that in 9 months or less. That's just how the math works, right? And so we get to see the impact of those interventions almost immediately. And so that's a really interesting area of research for me.
That's great. Michael, not making fun of tech, it's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it really is very rural. Lubbock is certainly that major metropolis out in West Texas. But you and I both know that rural health in Texas is at times abysmal just because of the geographies involved, the lack of physician coverage, the poor reimbursement, you name it, social determinants of health. So are you seeing many of your students who have a real heart for rural healthcare being out there? Because I know Texas Tech tends to draw a lot of kids from West Texas and Eastern New Mexico. So are you seeing that? Or are you encouraging that? Talk to me a little bit about rural health.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a big area of focus of the Health Sciences Center for all the reasons you described, right? That is the population to a large extent they're serving. It's a huge geographic area that they're serving at the medical center there. And so in terms of the training programs, they think in those terms as well. And so for my students, as you point out, many of them are coming from those communities. So they have firsthand experience about a grandmother who couldn't get an appointment for whatever, or they couldn't make the drive 2 hours from wherever they live to get the healthcare they need. And so they are very attuned to that, very much thinking about how do we use technology, whether it's telehealth or other services to expand the reach. Even, and I get, you know, they're forward thinking. They're thinking through, well, what about broadband access so that they have access to telemedicine? How do you partner with local libraries or other community centers to bring healthcare into those communities? So a lot of creative ways of thinking about how we expand care to rural, because that's the environment many of them have lived in.
Yeah, that's great to hear because, you know, Texas continues to have the largest, the highest rate of closures of rural hospitals in the country. And, you know, you and I both know that sometimes that's not necessarily a bad thing. But just because, you know, we both recognize the fact that healthcare, you know, has to be practiced and repetitive to make sure that you're providing that quality of care. And so a lot of these small hospitals, they may only see, you know, one or two heart attacks a month, if that many. And so, you know, they're triaging those folks in their ED and they're shipping them out immediately. But also we can't forget that rural hospitals are really, and many times, the largest employer in the town. And a hospital is a real, a town without a hospital has a bit of an issue with their self-esteem, if you will, because they don't have that major sense of caring for their community that a hospital brings. And so, you know, I think that again, you know, the emphasis on rural health is so key. And so I'm so glad to hear you talk about that. So with your focus on academic medical centers, what's the difference in an academic medical center versus a large tertiary care center that's not academically affiliated? And what are some of those particular challenges that an academic medical center faces that other large hospitals may not?
Right. Well, and as I mentioned, this is where I spent the majority of my career, was in academic medical centers. And to your first question, in terms of kind of what are they? What's the definition? How are they different? There are, of course, many community hospitals, large community hospitals that have training programs. They have, you know, residencies, house staff, those sorts of things. A true academic medical center, though, is one that truly does promote what's referred to as the tripartite mission. So there's clinical, there's teaching, and there's research. And so it's not just that they have some training programs there. They also have the research infrastructure, and they have significant clinical programs. Oftentimes, these academic medical centers also serve as the safety net providers in their community because of the breadth and scope of services that they offer. And so that really is the distinction, that an academic medical center is engaged in all three of those academic missions, if you will, the clinical, the teaching, and the research. You know, in terms of the challenges that are facing them, you know, some of these will not be surprising to your listeners, right? And I teach economics, so I'm going to start with economics, right? And all hospitals, or I should say many hospitals, are struggling with economics now. Probably the different flavor of that for academic medical centers, though, is that so much of what they have focused on in the past has been research. And so, you know, grant funding, as we're seeing, it's a little bit of a political hot button now, but we're seeing grant funding reduce now. So that's reducing the revenue that these organizations are bringing in to support their infrastructure. I don't know how recent this statistic is, but I know in past lives, you tended to think about for every dollar of research funding you brought in, it cost about $1.25 to get it. Now, again, I don't think you've got to be an economist to realize that's a bad business model, right? You're generating a dollar for every $1.25 you spend. And so there's always been a need to fill that gap, but now it seems like that gap is growing. So again, for academic medical centers, that's a real challenge. The other thing is something you mentioned a moment ago, these closures of hospitals that are occurring, not only in Texas, throughout the country. The closing hospitals, but also some hospitals that are closing services that are not profitable. Well, you know, just because they close an OB program doesn't mean women in the community are stopping having babies, right? Somebody still has to take care of them. And those often fall to the academic medical center or the safety net hospital. And so that's just creating more economic challenges when the community hospital closes something because it's not making money and all of a sudden the academic medical center picks it up. Well, their bottom line just got hurt. And so, you know, I saw a statistic recently from America's Essential Hospitals that deals with safety net hospitals where 6% of the hospitals in the country are providing 30% of the charity care. And so, you know, again, so those economics, you know, many hospitals are struggling with them. They just have a little bit different flavor for academic medical centers.
Sure, sure. And that makes total sense to me. So you touched on the issues that all hospitals tend to face. What are the solutions? Any thoughts come to mind how we can help close those gaps or enhance the delivery of care?
Well, you know, they're challenging, right? There are no easy answers to complex problems. Yeah. If we had them, then, you know, you and I would put a business together and, you know, we'd be set and so would our exactly. children, right? But there are some things that I'm seeing many academic centers begin to do. You know, initially, they're having to lean more on philanthropy, right? I mean, this is a big part of how these academic medical centers, especially some of the larger and older ones, are surviving, is they've got an endowment that's throwing off some investment dollars that's helping them kind of make ends meet. They're also looking at new clinical service lines. You know, in the past, there was this little bit of town and gown. The academic medical center did these things. The community hospitals did these other things. Well, the academic medical centers now are trying to find more profitable service lines to add. So they're sort of being more competitive now to try to fill some of this gap. There are some other ones that are pretty creative. I saw an article the other day about Valley Children's Hospital out in California. They had some excess land on their campus. And so they basically become a developer. They're building retail and, you know, entertainment to generate revenue to support their healthcare enterprise. And so it is a little bit sad to me that hospitals have to find some other way to support themselves to be hospitals. But, you know, again, I think those organizations that can be more entrepreneurial, be more creative, they're the ones that are going to be successful here, because some of these gaps are so big that just your normal, you know, belt tightening cost reduction just isn't going to get there.
No, you're exactly right. Okay, so in my world now, in advising healthcare firms, everything has an AI component. I've had to go and take courses about AI because I knew that my little foray into ChatGPT and Claude weren't really going to cut it whenever I'm dealing with these companies. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, the possibility of utilizing AI in enhancing healthcare delivery.
Yeah, one of the more interesting ones I've seen recently, and as you know, many of your listeners do, I'm sure, length of stay is such a challenge in hospitals. And there, you know, we could spend the rest of the podcast talking about all the ills that come from excess length of stay, right? But it is a challenge that has been very difficult for hospitals to solve. I'm beginning to see some more use of AI on the front end of patient admissions to begin laying out the care path for patients based on their presenting conditions, based on their history, using these, you know, large databases that can pull this information so that the preparation for discharge, as we always say, should begin when they're admitted. But AI is really beginning to facilitate that. And so I think what that's going to do is to see a reduction in length of stay that we couldn't get to otherwise. That's going to improve capacity. It's going to improve risk situations where, you know, nobody wants to be in the hospital longer than they have to be. So that's one of the more intriguing things that I've seen recently, is just leveraging AI to improve discharge planning to reduce length of stay. Again, there are a lot of really kind of esoteric ways that AI is being used in research. And those are fascinating. But as a former healthcare practitioner, I really love those ones that are just where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And a number of my companies are doing just what you said, you know, looking at the overall throughput within the hospital, you know, and how can they reduce that length of stay? So okay, what other trends are you seeing in healthcare today that you're preparing your students for tomorrow?
Yeah, one of the things that we talk a lot about is the consolidation that is, and that's not new news, right? That's something that's been happening over many years. But what that consolidation is doing is some of what you've described. It's consolidating the resources as well. And so when you think about some of the, you know, labor shortage issues that we're dealing with, and we always talk about nurses, but your listeners, know that it's other professionals as well. It's respiratory therapists. It's medical technologists. I can't remember, you know, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago, the first time that I had to hire contract laboratory technicians. I mean, that I'd never even thought about that before in my career, but all of a sudden it became a reality. And so, you know, everybody's familiar with those challenges that we're trying to deal with. But I think what this consolidation is doing is it's also creating an issue around the physician specialist as well. We know that some of these highly in-demand specialists, they don't necessarily want to go to a rural community and work by themselves, right? But no one wants to be the only physiatrist or the only epileptologist at a hospital. And so that consolidation is putting more of that human resource, those physician resources, in regional areas. And so what I'm helping or trying to help my students prepare for is how then do they take that regional consolidation, but still find a way to diffuse that into communities that don't necessarily have access to it. And it's got to be an easy, accessible way to get those services. But there's also got to be a way for healthcare providers to get paid for it as well. And, you know, that's, as we know, much of the barrier is that the economic model right now points us to in-person, face-to-face, and we've got to find a better way to deal with that.
No, you're exactly right. You know, another consequence of that consolidation of providers, I was just at the American College of Healthcare Executives Congress in Houston earlier in March. And I had an opportunity to talk to a lot of graduate students, and I was so surprised. I mean, it's March, and they're still trying to secure residency spots for next year. And they were telling me that this consolidation has greatly reduced those. I was wondering, have your grad students out at Tech found that same issue?
Well, I think we are seeing that nationwide, because not only the consolidation, but some hospitals, you know, because they've reduced administrative ranks, they've gotten, you know, lean, as it were, they just have less capacity to take on these residents. Right. Sometimes it's a simple financial decision as well, which I you know, I understand that. I've been in those seats before, but I fear that's sort of short-sighted. As you mentioned, we historically have not done a great job of transition planning, succession planning. And so obviously I'm an advocate for students. I think giving them those real-world experiences is so critical to helping them just learn how it actually works, but also making the connections that I know you and I have benefited from throughout our careers.
No, you're right. Well, and I think something else too, maybe a positive impact of that whole thing, is many of these students are recognizing, hey, you know, I can have a great healthcare career, maybe not in a hospital or in a health system. I might be able to go a different route.
Yeah, that is something we talk about a lot. And I have to catch myself, because I spent my whole career mostly on the provider side. But we do try to talk about that very thing, that that's really just one component of the healthcare industry. You know, there's technology, right? There's pharmaceuticals, there's medical devices. They're all different ways that one could come at this, still be involved in healthcare, still about improving the health and well-being of their communities, but it might not be in a hospital. And so just trying to open students' eyes. As a matter of fact, I was doing a podcast for one of my courses just the other day with an executive from a FQHC, a federally qualified health center. Just, you know, a different model of healthcare to try to expand those opportunities for consideration for students.
Yeah. Well, Michael, we have covered a lot of ground in what is already 30 minutes, buddy. I mean, you know, I knew this was going to happen. You and I get together, we get to talking healthcare, and time just flies.
It goes fast.
But I'm still going to give you the last word. Any final words that you'd like to share with my audience?
Well, I just, again, so appreciate the opportunity to be with you on this podcast, and just, you know, encourage everyone, just like I do to my students, go back to why you do this. What is your calling? And on those really, really hard days, which we all have, and you wonder, did I really make a difference? You did. And just remind yourself, this is why I'm doing it. I'm doing this to try and improve the health status of the community I serve. And so hopefully that's a little bit of encouragement for your listeners.
Well, I really appreciate that. And that is a great word to end on. Dr. Michael Wiggins, Texas Tech University Health Science Center. Thanks for joining me today on I'd Up Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevens.
It's my pleasure.
All right, take care. And thank you for joining us as well. And I look forward to seeing you again this time next week. Take care. Holy cow, I looked down, it was 30 minutes. I'm like, that was great. Thanks so much.
Man, I loved it. I just loved the energy back and forth. It was a great time. I'm not surprised, having listened to your podcast and just having known you over the years. So that was a real pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. I will let you know whenever I drop this on. I usually drop it on LinkedIn first, then YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And please share it on your channels as well. If the Health Science Center will do that, I'd appreciate that. It may be a few weeks out. My editors are a little behind because I've been recording a ton. So, but anyway, thanks again. Great to see you. Let's make sure we stay in touch.
I look forward to that. And good luck. Let me know if there's anything I can do for you.
Same. Take care, Michael.